The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Hey, welcome back to another edition of Mission Minded. We keep your mind and your mission, your mind. We couldn't do it without Michael Coleman. Of course, Michael Coleman's been working with non-for-profits his entire life. And right now, he just took on a gig with the Montgomery Food Bank. So we're super excited about him and can't wait to see how he's going to make that already wonderful organization even better. Michael, how you been, man? What's going on?
Well, the transition has been incredibly busy, but just really energized, really excited to come into an organization that's making such a great impact, and just figuring out how we can do it best we can to impact the most people in need.
We got lots of emails. Go to info@TonyCurryRadio.net. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You can also go to our website at TonyCurryRadio.net, become a bonehead, and then send your emails. You can also go to Spotify or anywhere you get your podcast, and you can leave emails there as well. We got a bunch to get into today. You've been down there now for about a month, and I know several shows back we were talking about your first 100 days, much like the president always talks about his first 100 days. Are you about where you thought you'd be about 30 days in?
Well, you know, I always say it's a good characteristic I have and a bad characteristic. I always say, okay, Michael, just come in and assess, evaluate. And that's what I would tell somebody else, but it's my nature to come in and start at least organizing processes. So, and lots of times it's not that a process is wrong. I'm just very much a strategic thinker. And so I begin to look at, okay, and asking the questions, why do we do what we do, down to some small details. Why is it that we're doing this, and why are we doing it this way? And what I find is if people can't explain that, then they're not thinking strategically. Strategic thinking is about bringing every process together to work towards a desired goal. And so if you ask one department, why do you do this? And another department, why you do this? You see that they're not necessarily working towards the same goal. And so
can you give me an example? Cause I'm sure we talked about this before. A lot of people say, well, that's the way we've always done it. And that's not a good answer, but can you give me an example?
Yeah. So, well, I can give you an example of when I came in here. So we wanted to automate, they recognized for a while that we needed to have an automated inventory system and barcode food as it comes in, and just have being able to order for agencies in real time. Mm-hmm. You will just incredibly improve your efficiency, and they've been wanting to do that, but it's been very difficult to make that transition coming out of COVID and all of that. So we have somebody who's dedicated to that, who was ready to launch. And so they did, they made an announcement, hey, our fiscal year runs July to June. And so she started that process, and she had trained the people that she thought needed to know the system. What wasn't happening was the directors of the other parts of the staff were not connected. And so you would hear like, oh, well, so-and-so is doing this new inventory system, but it wasn't discussed openly amongst leaders. So there were some departments who needed that training who weren't getting the training. And so we were moving forward with some departments, but not all departments. So across the communication channels broke down. Mm-hmm. And so just from the top down, I had to come in and say, well, first of all, if this is going to be our core system, we have to figure out how to do it right, but we have to communicate across all departments and make sure we're all in sync. Because even when you update the inventory system, what you have to then do is you have to automate your processes. So it may sound like that's an odd thing to say, but if you are manually inputting all the information and tracking it that way, well, then when you go to automated systems, your processes also have to change.
Sure.
And so they're still doing things in a manual way. Now, that's not, please understand, that's not at all a criticism. That is normal of any major transition within an organization. But it's always the challenge to make sure that the left hand knows what the right hand's doing, because the left hand may hold on to the old practices and the right hand is moving ahead. So you have some departments that are moving ahead of other departments, and then eventually that's going to come back and they're going to be on two different systems, two different ways, which really reduces efficiency and effectiveness. And it just really can break down an organization and keep us from really accomplishing what we have the ability to accomplish.
I gotcha. This is Michael Coleman with Mission Minded. It's a show that learns live. We do it every Wednesday. First run shows here on Tony Curry Radio, and lots of people, tens of thousands of folks, listen to the show on Wednesday. Then they go back and go to Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcast and search Tony Curry Radio, and you can go back and listen to many of the episodes we've done. And of course, he was with the Jimmy Hale Mission for a while. He was with a non-for-profit before that. He's been doing it for well over, two, three decades. So he's been around doing his thing, and he knows what he's talking about, and I'm with the Montgomery Food Bank. By far, and we've got an influx of emails, by far the majority of people want to know, how does the vetting process work on getting food from a food bank? We obviously went through a pandemic where schools were closed, and so kids weren't eating lunch. We've seen a lot of people that probably had to go to soup kitchens or pantries or food banks that had never done that before. What is the vetting process? And I want to ask you another question on the other side, because, you know, watching it on television, see people going through a food bank line, whether it be at their church, whether it be the Montgomery Food Bank or anything else. If you see somebody in a $90,000 Lexus going through a food, it's not a good look. And I realize that we all have different issues, and a lot of people, again, never had the opportunity. If you got the car and you're paying for the car, that's the car you got. I totally get that. But talk about that access a little bit too.
Yeah. So hold on to that as a second question.
Okay.
I have some really specific things and anecdotes to give you.
Love it.
But let's start with just how the food bank works. So the number one feeding organization in our country is called Feeding America. And we are an organization, even though we are a separate 501c3, we have a contract with Feeding America, and we are required to do certain reporting mechanisms and how we care for food and how we distribute that food. There's all these requirements. Now, we can be as innovative in that process as we want to. So it's not like that but it's just a great channel. And what they do is they bring influence and education and advocacy to the government and really help us fight for issues. So I think it's a really good, sound organization. But here's how it works. So Feeding America has a network of food banks, and they are assigned certain territory. So for us, we are responsible for 35 counties, which are more than half in the state of Alabama. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean 35 counties come to us. We have what's called partner distribution organizations. So it's really like almost many food banks, but feeding them. So we have East Alabama and Auburn, West Alabama, and Tuscaloosa. We have the Wiregrass. But they don't go directly through Feeding America. They come through us as a food channel and a funding channel. Mm-hmm. So the USDA sends us a certain amount of food and a certain amount of money to distribute those commodities. And then we have emergency food programs. There was COVID money. There's all sorts of things to meet needs. And so it's all funneled down and tracked through Feeding America. There's audits that are done every year so that this money can't go missing in the system. And I know that's a lot of people suspect that. Mm-hmm. There are requirements as to what to do with that money. And so and how to handle this food. It's just a great process. On our end, from a food bank perspective, we have 12 of those counties that come directly to our facility. So as we look out over those 12 counties, how we best distribute food is through partnering agencies. So an agency might be a church, it might be a school, it might be whatever, who says, hey, I want to get certified to be an agency so I can give food to my community. So what it looks like is, let's say a church would come to us, and there's a certain amount of training they have to get. And once they get certified and know the paperwork, know the regulations, because all that has to be tracked, Then they get set up and then they get put in our system where they have the authority to order from us. And so they get a catalog of what food's available. They put in an order every week and they come put that up. I mean, they come pick that up from us. There's a very low cost. There is a cost. They aren't purchasing the food. It's very important. The food is being distributed at no cost. However, there's a handling fee of 18 cents a pound. Mm-hmm. Some foods are less. And if we get an abundance of it, sometimes we can give it away for 9 cents a pound for handling fee, but it's at very low cost. So those poundage could be, you could be getting turkeys,
yeah.
You know, 18 cents a pound.
Wow.
And again, but you're not paying for, it doesn't matter what the food is. In other words, it's just weighed and distributed that way.
Uh-huh.
Those agencies then take that and then community members, individuals come to them, sign up for them. And then they, however often that agency serves, some agencies serve every week, some do once a month, some do around Christmas and you know special days like Thanksgiving. It's our job, and I will tell you, Feeding America is coming up with a new strategy. We are right in line with that already, which is how do we get more food in people's need, in the people who need its hands. So let me give you just a quick example. I don't want to get too far into weeds.
Yeah.
Some people may be interested, some people may not. But right now, so you have to say, how do we measure if we're successful or not? So we look into a county and there's a statistic, I won't get into what it's called, but basically they determine by the amount of the pounds of food we get into any county, and based on the poverty census, they determine that we need to provide 80 meals per every person in need. That's the goal.
Okay.
And if we get that, then we're meeting. So you may put a lot of pounds in there and you're like, okay, it all works out in the formula. Yes, we're meeting the goal. The problem is, and this is why Feeding America is going to a new standard, and I really agree with it, is all your assistants may be in the northern part of a county and you may look out over a map and realize you don't have any distribution in the southern part. So you may, and people in the southern part of the county who are in poverty may not have access to the food bank or to the food pantry. They may not have access on that day. They may not have the ability to get to and from. They may not even have a car. So they need an agency in their area where a friend can take them. And so that's what I'm working on every day, is looking at our counties and how do I get greater access for the food that comes into the USDA through farmers. We have a new farming program that's paid for where rural farmers get money and they bring the fresh produce directly to us. Well, we got to get it in the hands of the people who need it.
Yeah.
That stuff's not going to keep it forever. So we have to really be working on our processes to get them as efficient and effective as we can. But that brings me to the second question, because I used to be an agency. I was a director of benevolence for a nonprofit, and I would come to, matter of fact, to this very food bank, and I would get about 2,000 pounds of food per week,
mm-hmm.
and would take that back and we would distribute that. And we were feeding about 450 families a month. And what we would see is sometimes somebody would come in and that we would go back out and there would be a Cadillac Escalade who was here in the food pantry.
Yeah.
Now, the raw emotional reaction to that is, oh, they're harming the system.
Sure.
Or they're abusing the system. And so there should be processes put in place to prevent that. But then when you, again, it's always important to peel back that top layer of judgment and look at what's happening. So these are the kind of things that I would find out. Sometimes, they would be bringing their neighbor who didn't have any transportation.
Yeah.
And so they would be, even though they're in their Cadillac Escalade, it's not for them. They're bringing neighbors or people they know in their community or at their church in need, and they are helping them with the resources they have.
There you go.
Now, if I walk out there and say, hey, I'm not serving anybody with a Cadillac Escalade, get out of here. It's short-sighted.
Yeah.
But that's who we are. And this kind of is a huge area in just helping people to start with, is we tend to instantly judge who's worthy, who's not, or look at something like an expensive car and all of a sudden accuse that person of gaming the system. So that's one example of where they do that. Another example is I've seen people with nice cars come in, and then when you hear their story, you say, yes, I had a good job, and I've always paid my way, but I've been, I got injured, or I got whatever, or I got sick, and I hadn't been able to work for 3 months, and I lost my job, and now I'm not in good enough health to go back to work. And he may have a Cadillac Escalade that he was paying for, fine, but right now they need help.
Yeah.
And so I try to have a mindset of going into it knowing, yes, are there going to be people who abuse the system? Yes. But I don't want to risk keeping food away from those who are in need so that I can spend all my resources trying to weed those people out. To me, if they're gaming the system, and they don't need this food and they're doing with it whatever, that's between them and the Lord. You know, I just don't have time to fix all those problems. What I do want to do, though, is make sure that I'm not making some sort of judgment that keeps food out of the hands of somebody in need.
He's Michael Coleman, a Mission Minded. We run it live every Wednesday right here on Tony Curry Radio, and of course also on Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, info@tonycurryradio.net. We got a bunch of emails we'll get into here. It's a show about non-for-profits, and of course Michael now down at the Montgomery Food Bank's been down there for about 30 days. So if somebody is in need of feeding their family, regardless of what their situation is, how do they go about reaching out to an agency to find out where they should go to get food? And second of all, what's the cutoff? Is there someone that sits down with them and says, okay, listen, based on your situation and your need, or is it an honor system? How does that work?
Yeah, total honor system. And I will tell you, back when I used to do an agency, people would have to bring documentation. It used to be, you know, you would have to bring in like your last year's tax return, or you would have to bring in your W-2. To prove that you were, when you signed up at the agency level. Now you don't come to the food bank. The food bank, think about it, does more indirect service. We empower the agencies to then meet the needs of their communities. So we're giving food to people who give the food out.
Mm-hmm.
So the individuals who go to the agencies have to sign. It's an affidavit that says the statistics for poverty, you know, based on the number of family members you have, the number of your income, it's basically on the honor system, which again, you're going to have people who abuse that system. But it used to be that they made it so cumbersome that a lot of people, again, in poverty may not be able to have some of the easy ways. Like I can go online right now and download my W-2s or whatever.
Yeah.
And so if they lost that paperwork, the idea is, hey, I don't, you know, they're just not equipped sometimes or have the resources to overcome some of the barriers that you find in poverty. And so the idea is you don't want to keep them from the assistance that they need. And there's absolutely no limit. So it's really what that agency does. So if that agency said, now an agency has the ability to set their own limits. For instance, it may say we serve once a month, or if they serve every week, they may say you can't come but once a month. We will serve you every month, but we can only serve you once a month. You don't get to come every week and get a fresh load of groceries. So, but could they go to another food bank distribution? In theory, they could, but the reality is the vast majority of people really do need this. They really are struggling to make ends meet. Many of them are employed, but it's, you know, minimum wage type work. It's not that they don't have a good work ethic. It's not that they're that they're lazy. I cannot begin to tell you the number of people sometimes in their 40s and 50s that would come in through our agency on walkers, or had, you know, learning disabilities, but just all sorts of reasons why they were not going to be effective or be able to move forward in their own way and just needed that help.
Yeah.
And, so I really, over time, not just in this way, but, you know, I've dealt with homelessness. I've dealt with people in addiction. I have really learned, the importance of setting aside judgment, And I'm not to say that you don't dig down and try to help somebody circumvent. Of course you do. You try to give them wisdom and help them move forward in any way they're equipped to. But the relationship can't start with judgment. So whatever I feel that temptation to, I just push that out of my mind and say, if they tell me they need something, I'm going to do everything in my power to fulfill that need. And then let's have a conversation about where to go from there.
It's just mission minded, keeping your mind, your mission, your mind. We hear it live every Wednesday right here on TKR and Tony Curry Radio, and also wherever you get your podcast, info@tonycurryradio.net, and emails. Great email from Sam up in Nashville. He actually went through a time during the pandemic and said he had to reach out to a food bank in the Nashville area for the first time in his life. He said he was embarrassed by it, but they were fantastic. And he said he actually got healthier than he's ever been based on the nutritional value of the meals he was getting through his Nashville food bank. He said, are the food banks pretty much in Feeding America around the country under the same nutritional guidelines as, say, our schools are, to make sure that when you're giving out that food, they have nutritional value to them?
Yeah, so the answer to that question is that's the goal. Here's the reality is lots of times, so not only do you get food through USDA, we have trucks that go around and get stuff from Walmart, from Target. They give us pallets of stuff that, you know, they don't feel like they can distribute for whatever reason. I mean, it's not spoiled food, of course. We could never do that or never be interested in doing that. But we get that food in sometimes, and that's handled differently than the U.S. We have a little bit more flexibility in how we distribute it. But lots of times you go there and you may get huge pallets of cookies.
Yeah.
And now, this may surprise some of our listeners, but I've been dealing with people in poverty and poverty thinking for a very long time. And it's really sad. The food labels that most middle-class people at least can navigate through, very few people in poverty read and understand that. It's not an intellectual issue. It's that they don't know what they're looking at, or they see the numbers and don't know how to interpret those numbers in terms of making healthier choices. The government is well-intentioned trying to inform people to make better decisions. But the reality is the average person in poverty doesn't make decisions. And I'm not exaggerating. There are some people who do not see any difference in eating a bag of Oreos or a bag of apples.
Yeah.
It doesn't even play into their mind when they're hungry, they eat. And of course, in poverty, you know, the cheaper foods, it's easier to get your hand on a bag of Oreos than it is on fresh produce, especially when you're in rural environments or very impoverished where you don't have grocery stores in your community and you don't have you have to take what's given. So I'm not trying to dictate anybody's diet, but I want to be conscious that we want to put as much fresh produce, healthy items as we can. I don't want to deprive people of cookies and you know, because heaven knows I'm a cookie eater and a sweet eater. So I would be the one if I could that would sit there and eat a bag of Oreos every day if I could. But so we try to be very mindful in that and try to not overly put too many sweet crates of sweet fruit food in with shipments. Simply because we're just trying to help them make better choices without trying to parent everybody. We just say, if they don't know this, we're going to kind of make it easier for them to make better decisions.
There you go. Janice in Decatur says that she's a big fan of yours. She's actually met you a couple times, and she's always given to the Jimmy Hale mission. And she wants to know, what's the etiquette in reaching out to previous donors from previous endeavors if you're moving from one non-for-profit to another? You got a fan here. She actually likes you, and she wants to follow her. She wants to follow you. And I'm thinking to myself, well, first of all, you're giving to a cause, right? But if you really believe in the person that's running that cause, perhaps that money comes too. How does that work?
Well, first of all, I'm glad to add to my fan club. That makes two. That's you and my dog.
Yes, yes.
I do not even include my wife and my two daughters or my grandchildren. It's you and my dog right now. So it's a committee of two.
There you go.
But thank you very much for that. And now I will tell you, she brings up really two interesting issues here. One is, how do you go about doing that, making that transition? And second of all, from the donor's perspective, lots of times because you're like, hey, there's so many good things to go to support. How do I know what to support? And lots of times people will support the person because you build a trusting relationship with that person.
Sure.
So they're like, if you believe in Jim Smith and you believe he's a person of integrity and value, and you're like, well, Jim Smith moves from here to here, I'm going to support Jim Smith. I will tell you, you see this all the time in banking, and you see this all the time in CPA firms. If your banker is with this bank, your loyalty is to that banker oftentimes and not with a bank. And when he moves banks, you move accounts.
True.
Because you want that same relationship. So it's very much the same way. It's not uncommon. I had people who followed me from Montgomery up to Birmingham and donated to the Jimmy Hill Mission, not because they believed it was important serving homeless individuals and especially helping them permanently get back on their feet. But they just trusted me, and it means a lot that people would have that confidence, and I take that very serious. I don't want to do anything. I try to be very transparent with all money and donations and all that for that very reason. But from my position, it's a very sensitive issue when you transition from one organization, not one nonprofit, to another, because they're always concerned. Organizations are about that very thing, about donors leaving and following the person who left. So I make it a point. I have never tried to influence somebody directly to follow me. And let me give you an example. I started Hope Inspired Ministries, and I was there for 7 years before I went to Birmingham. So a lot of people who gave based on supporting me, that believed in me, believed in what I was doing, and they supported me. And there was concern that some people after I left would stop donating, not because Hope Inspired Ministry had changed or not that it was not worthy, but they were given because I had a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And that did happen some. And some people said, well, Michael, I'm just going to follow you. Now I'm back here. What I see my role is just continuing to build relationships. I would never put pressure on anybody. I would never want to hurt the Jimmy Hill Mission. I'd never want to hurt my previous at Hope Inspired Ministries and say, hey, I'm here now. You used to support me over there. Will you start supporting me here?
There you go. Yeah.
Because it undermines what they're trying to do. And because I leave an organization or move on, I still want them to be successful So it's an integrity issue with me, is to not undermine those organizations. Now, having said that, if a donor who has followed me in the past calls me and says, hey, I want to know what you're doing and I want to know how I can help, then I'm going to go to lunch with that person and I'm going to share with them everything we're doing.
Sure.
But I would and invite them to be a part of what I'm doing. What I would never do is if somebody had the capacity to give $500 a month and they were giving it all to an organization I was at, I would never say, well, hey, could you give $250 each? Could you, you know, and try to split donations or anything like that. I just consider that to be unethical. If somebody chooses to do it on their own and approaches me, of course, I welcome that. But it can be a very delicate subject. And So it's a tight line you have to walk.
Well, and to go along with your lines, you know, there's two different ways to give. You give to something that is to your heart or worthy of your cause because you've been directly affected by it, or you give to an organization, which I think most people do just because they want to know they're making the biggest impact. And I know there's thousands of great organizations, big organizations, small organizations, and when they realize the direct impact they're making, and hopefully you can do both of those things, and certainly you've been working with a lot of wonderful organizations that do make a huge impact, so I'm going where Michael Coleman's going is where I'm going. That's where I'm going, brother, but hopefully I can help everybody out. Hopefully I can be a philanthropist. I can help hundreds of different organizations when I get there. But hey, Michael, great show. We got some emails we didn't get to. We'll get to those next week. Again, you can hear the show every Wednesday right here on Tony Curry Radio. And by the way, since you're on Tony Curry Radio and you're live on the Tony Curry Radio app and thousands of folks are listening to you every single week, they are going to know where you're at, man. They're going to follow you. So you can be getting some phone calls like Janice from Decatur, which is a great thing. And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to make an impact as well right here with this radio station and our podcast network. Michael, I love you. Thank you so much for everything you do. We'll catch up next week.
Hey, great show. Thanks for all those again who listen. I appreciate it. And please send in your questions. They really help us think in different ways. And really, it's a way we can help you directly with what your challenges are. So thanks again.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.